there's a war going on. There's a cosmic battle between God and Satan, between the angels and the demons, between good and evil. That is not some Renaissance message from yesteryear. It is as true as the breath in your lungs and as real to life as the heart that beats in your chest.
The last book in the Bible is complicated. Revelation contains a lengthy and strange vision received by John while living alone on the island of Patmos. The imagery John received in his dream is strange to us. In fact, most Bible readers, even scholars, find it challenging to interpret. Well, for the last few months, Chuck Swindoll has taken us on a journey through Revelation. And today, we open our Bibles to Revelation chapter 10, where the cosmic battle between God and Satan continues. Chuck titled his message, A Strong Angel, A Strange Assignment.
If you have a Bible handy, locate Revelation 10. And I want to read for you from the 10th chapter of this last book of the Bible, a very unusual 11 verses from the Scriptures. Revelation 10, 1. I saw another strong angel coming down out of heaven, clothed with a cloud, and the rainbow was upon his head, and his face was like the sun, and his feet like pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book, which was open. He placed his right foot on the sea and his left on the land. And he cried out with a loud voice, as when a lion roars. And when he had cried out, the seven peals of thunder uttered their voices. When the seven peals of thunder had spoken, I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying, seal up the things which the seven peals of thunder have spoken, and do not write them. Then the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and on the land lifted up his right hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created heaven and the things in it, and the earth and the things in it, and the sea and the things in it, that there will be delay no longer. Verse 8, the voice which I heard from heaven, I heard again speaking with me and saying, go, take the book which is open in the hand of the angel who stands on the sea and on the land. So I went to the angel, telling him to give me the little book. And he said to me, take it and eat it. It will make your stomach bitter, but in your mouth it will be sweet as honey. I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it. And in my mouth it was sweet as honey. And when I had eaten it, my stomach was made bitter. And they said to me, you must prophesy again concerning many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. Isn't that intriguing? What in the world am I going to preach from that? One of the reasons my work is so exciting is the challenge of taking on verses like that that seem so mysterious.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To dig deeper into the book of Revelation with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures Bible Studies by going to insight.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck called A Strong Angel, A Strange Assignment.
The book of Revelation can be so intimidating. It's the only word I can think of. Its symbols are so extreme, and its scenery is at times so frightening, we shudder a little. We at times wonder if we're going to be able to see our way through it. You see, our world is so empirical. We're able to measure things around us. We're able to touch them, feel them. We're able to see them. We can weigh them often. And we like that. That gives us comfort. We like north, south, east, and west. We like inches and feet and yards and miles. And we like the familiar. It's interesting. The unfamiliar makes us a little nervous. And the book of Revelation is so full of the unfamiliar, the unseen, things that we've never even imagined, as we will see even in today's study. So it occurred to me there might be a simple way to get over the hump of our intimidation. And I think it would happen if we would continually see Revelation as the telling of a story. It's a story. And as is true of all stories, there are people and there are events, incidents that weave themselves together in a plot. As the plot builds toward the ultimate climax, or maybe more than one climax, from start to finish, there is this telling of the story. This past week, I finished reading John Eldridge's latest book, Waking the Dead. Like all of Eldridge's stuff, it's fascinating and intriguing and soul-searching. In it, I came across good words about stories. Eldridge writes this: what do great stories tell us? What do they have in common? What are they trying to get across? Wherever they may come from, whatever their shape might be, they nearly always speak to us in three eternal truths. Now, before I go further, I want you to write those three things down. Just put down three things true in every story. We'll come back to it, but I want to give them to you now. These aren't original with me. They come from John Eldridge. First, stories remind us that things are not what they seem. In other words, there's a whole lot more going on than what meets the eye. We stay interested in stories because we're coming across the realization that things are not always what they seem. Second, some great battle or quest or struggle is well underway. When you get into a story, it isn't long before you encounter a struggle or a quest or a battle. In other words, in parentheses, you could say, this is a world at war. Now, admittedly, you and I know, certainly from the book of Revelation, much of that warfare is around us, but not seen by us. However, there's a battle going on. I'll get to that in a moment. Here's the third one, and this was the inside curve I didn't expect. Last, but not by a long shot, least, every story shouts to us that in this desperate hour, we have a crucial role to play. We have a crucial role to play. And in keeping with Eldridge's style, he adds this: we don't believe it. This is the one we doubt most of all. Our days are not extraordinary. They're filled with the mundane, with hassles mostly. And we are a dime a dozen. Nothing special, really. Probably a disappointment to God. I think it would shock us to know how many people in this room today believe their lives are really mundane and not that important in the big scheme of things. In fact, truth be told, I believe many of you really believe you're a disappointment to God. So when I mention a crucial role to play, you think, well, I'm sure glad so-and-so is here because that surely fits her, or he certainly would understand that. His world is a crucial world, or his role to fill. But me? As the story of the book of Revelation begins to unfold, all three of these points emerge. First, we obviously discover that things are not what they seem. There's another entire realm that's going on. There's a plan running its course. There are events falling into place that are not only transpiring today, but they are leading toward the events of the future that are right on God's timetable, right on course. And we don't see them. The papers don't write about them. The evening news doesn't include those things. Unless it's in the realm of the spiritual Christian books, you don't read about them in the secular texts of today. Certainly not in the magazines, other form of the media, but it's a world going on. There are things that are happening. And so what is reality, what we would call reality, is not really what we would expect. And that's the unseen world. Second, there's a war going on. There's a cosmic battle between God and Satan, between the angels and the demons, between good and evil. That is not some Renaissance message from yesteryear. That is not some dreamy kind of thought that was born in the mind of the divines of the early centuries. It is as true as the breath in your lungs and as real to life as the heart that beats in your chest. There's a war going on. It goes on every day. Now, third, we have a crucial role to play in the midst of this story. We're seeing it in Revelation. Let's take John, the writer. Let's just focus on him. He begins the book as nothing but an old island dweller. He's been exiled there by Domitian, the Roman emperor, who hopes to get rid of this witness for Christ and silence him forever. What more remote place could you put him than Patmos, the island down in the south part of the Aegean? Let him sit there and rot. And so John winds up barefoot on the shores of Patmos, listening every day to the crashing surf and hearing the chirp and sounds of the seagulls, wondering, is this the way I'm going to spend the rest of my life? After walking with Jesus those 3.5 years and loving him and learning of him and believing in him, this is it? Oh, Domitian thought he was silencing John when in fact he gave him the perfect platform. As one of my mentors used to say, you cannot produce great work without the luxury of leisure. If John's got anything, he's got leisure. But what a surprise when the heavens break open and lightning flashes and thunder rolls and voices begin to come, and John is told to write the things that you have seen, write the things that are, and write the things that are yet to happen in the future. And he starts to write. I would say a rather crucial role John plays, giving us, humanly speaking, the reason we have the book, the story in print. So when we get to chapter 10, we're in the middle of the story, and we've come to an interlude. I, for one, like interludes. It gives you time to stand up, stretch, go to the bathroom, take a break, relax a little from the press of life. We like them on long journeys, and there are rest stops. We pause and enjoy, may even take a nap there. In great plays, there are intermissions. In ball games, there are often half times. These are interludes. Webster defines an interlude as an intervening, interruptive period. An intervening, interruptive period. In other words, action is going on, one thing after another, back to back, often nonstop, and then suddenly there's a pause. And you get a few moments to shake away the busyness, and you look back to where you've been, and then you look forward to where you're going, and sometimes you look at where you are. And we do that in chapter 10. The Psalms have a one-word interlude statement, Selah, S-E-L-A-H. And you come across them. I've taught people for years that when you read that, think of pause and let that sink in. Pause right there, take a little break, read back over what you just read, and don't go ahead, just rest for a moment and let it sink in. Now, we need a break in this story, especially this break. We've had nonstop judgments, one after another, occurring. First, there were sealed judgments, and then between the sixth and the biggest one, the seventh, there was an interlude, chapter 7 of Revelation. And at the end of chapter 7, we see the breaking of the seventh seal, and then there are the trumpet judgments. They begin in chapter 8 and on into chapter 9, and it's one after another until the end of the sixth trumpet, and then there's an interlude. That's where we are right now. This interlude takes us from 10:1 to 11:14. We need it. This is helpful. From the outpouring of judgment and wrath on unbelievers, we come to a brief reprieve of consolation and encouragement. And here we're going to learn that there won't be a delay any further. They're going to run their course, and it's going to be finished with the triumphant presence of Christ who comes to deliver his people. Now, it's an interesting chapter in that there are some things in it that you won't find anywhere else in the Bible. First, there's communication between heaven and earth, one of the things that makes this chapter unique. And there's the appearance of this massive angel. See it for yourself. John writes in Revelation 10, verse 1, I saw another strong angel coming down out of heaven. And then John describes what he saw in that angel. Clothed with a cloud, rainbow was upon his head, face like the sun, feet like pillars of fire. End of verse 2, he placed his right foot on the sea, his left foot on the land. This is a massive creature. And he cried out with a loud voice as when a lion roars. And when he had cried out, the seven peals of thunder uttered their voices. I mean, we sit here calmly in this air-conditioned, comfortable place and checking our watches and concerned about lunch. And John is in the midst of a vision, and he's back on earth. He's got sand under his feet again. And he's no longer in the heavenlies watching things transpire in God's throne room. For some reason, the Lord in the intermission brings him back down to earth, and he sees an angel that comes out of heaven, and he's got a rainbow-like turban, and he's clothed in clouds, and he's got one foot on a continent and one foot on the ocean, and he's massive, like a giant statue standing astride sections of this earth. Why, first thought is that could be none other than an appearance of the Lord Jesus. But I don't believe that's who this is. First of all, he is called another angel. Another strong angel. See, this book has been full of angels. They're all over chapter 9 blowing trumpets. They're all over chapter 8 blowing trumpets. There are four angels beginning chapter 7. I mean, they're all over the place. So this is another angel. You say, well, it could be the Lord who is revealed here in this fashion. But the word another is intriguing. The Greeks had two ways to write another. We only have one. Our word another can mean another of the same kind or another of a different kind. The Greeks had the same thing, but they've got two different words for it. The first, another of a different kind, is the Greek word heteros, H-E-T-E-R-O-S, heteros. It means different from the others. We have our word heterosexual, a different sex, a different sex drive. And then there's the other word that means another of the same kind. It's the word allos, A-L-L-O-S, another of the same kind. On this platform are microphones, and there are some that are allos microphones, and then there is the one at this pulpit that is a heteros microphone. These are others of the same kind. They look alike, at least we could say that, and when from just looking at them, you'd say they're the same kind of mics. But when you get to this particular microphone, it's different from the way those look and probably is made differently inside. It's a heteros microphone. This is the word, another of the same kind. Jesus would not be another angel of the same kind, would he? Furthermore, this angel later on swears, verse 6, by him who lives forever and ever, who created things in heaven, things on earth, and things in the sea. Now, if he were Christ, he would swear unto himself. But since he is not, he is swearing to one who is divine, who is the creator, separating him from the category of the Lord Jesus. Furthermore, Christ is never presented in the New Testament as an angel. He is in the Old Testament, but not in the New. So we have this gigantic angel appearing, and he has a rainbow on his head. So much I could say about these symbols. I just mentioned this one. Rainbow is the symbol of mercy. Remember its origin? When there was a universal flood in the days of Noah, at the end of the flood, the Lord said there will never be another flood across the whole earth, and he gave us the rainbow as a sign of his mercy in relieving us from the threat or the fear of another universal flood. What we are not told is the name of the angel. Some of my sources said that he is Gabriel. I swear to you, I have looked all over to find that to be true, and there's nothing in the book that says his name is Gabriel. So they don't know what they're talking about. They think his name is Gabriel. It makes for nice writing, and you could say that, but I have no reason to say it's Gabriel or Michael. Seems a unique role this angel fills for this time where he comes down out of heaven, and I left out a very important part of this angel. Verse 2 tells us he had a little scroll in his hand. It's open. Now, he sends forth this sound. He cries with a loud voice as a lion would roar. I'm told by those in the wilderness that you can hear a lion's roar for miles across the terrain of a wilderness. It's a deep sound. So this is one of those loud sounds. And following that are seven peals, waves of thunder. And verse 4 tells us when the seven peals of thunder had spoken, I was about to write. Now, who's I? John, of course. He's the one writing the book. So he grabs his stylus, And he's going to write down what came from the thunder, and he stopped. There is a voice from heaven, not the angel. This seems to be the voice of God. Since it comes from heaven and is not identified, I think we're safe in assuming that this perhaps is Christ himself or the Father. I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying, seal up the things which the seven peals of thunder have spoken and do not write them. For the first time, John is told not to write something. So he stops. He stops short. He lays the piece of papyri aside and he waits for further instruction.
Chuck Swindoll is teaching from Revelation chapter 10. He's just midway through his message called A Strong Angel, A Strange Assignment. And we urge you to keep listening because there's much more from this passage to discover. First, a special word to those who want to learn more about this last book in the Bible. A few months ago, Chuck started this comprehensive study through all 22 chapters of Revelation, and many have inquired about receiving the CDs for the complete series. Well, you can order those CDs, and we can send them to your home. The study in Revelation comes in three acts. It's called Unveiling the End, Acts 1, 2, and 3. To order the complete study today, give us a call at 800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org/offer. By the way, if you're one of our valued monthly companions, did you realize you're entitled to a 15% discount on most resources in our online store? So if you're a monthly companion, we invite you to take advantage of this discount on the CDs for Revelation and the books, study guides, and other resources that Chuck has prepared for you. Plus, as a monthly companion, we want you to know that your regular contributions are truly making a difference. We recently heard from a friend who said, "Chuck, for more than two decades, you've been a voice of the Spirit to comfort, convict, and restore my weakened heart, especially during the storms of my life. May God continue to shower you with strength, wisdom, and courage." You know, it's so refreshing to hear how God is using this program and our financial supporters to help listeners rely on God for strength and grace. Maybe today's the day that you raise your hand and say, "Yes, Chuck, I'd like to become a monthly companion." You can do that right now by calling 800-772-8888 or follow the simple instructions at insight.org/monthly-companion. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues to describe what he calls A Strong Angel, A Strange Assignment, Thursday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Strong Angel, A Strange Assignment, was copyrighted in 2003, 2006, and 2024. And the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.